Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Elizabeth Reeve. I am today's American Woman National Elegant Mrs. 2015. I'm going to be speaking about the Old Glory and the history of the American flag. I have done some research on this, and Old Glory was coined by Captain William Driver. He was a shipmaster of Salem, Massachusetts in 1831. He was leaving on one of his many voyages aboard the brig and Charles and Doggett. And this would climax with the rescue of the mutineers of the Bounty. Some friends presented him with a beautiful flag of 24 stars. As the banner opened to the ocean breeze for the first time, he exclaimed, "Old Glory." He retired to Nashville in 1837, taking his treasured flag from his sea days with him. By the time the Civil War erupted, most everyone in and around Nashville recognized Captain Driver's Old Glory. When Tennessee seceded from the Union, rebels were determined to destroy his flag, but repeated searches revealed no trace of the hated banner. Then on February 25, 1862, Union forces captured Nashville and raised the American flag over the Capitol. It was rather small in size, and immediately folks began asking Captain Driver if Old Glory still existed. Happy to have soldiers with him this time, Captain Driver went home and began ripping at the seams of his bed cover. As the stitches holding the quilt topped the battling unraveled, the onlookers peered inside and saw the 24-starred original Old Glory. Captain Driver gently gathered up the flag and returned with the soldiers to the Capitol. Though he was 60 years old, the captain climbed up to the tower to replace the small banner with his beloved flag. The 6th Ohio Regiment cheered and saluted and later adopted the nickname Old Glory as their own, telling and retelling the story of Captain Driver's devotion to the flag we honor yet today. Captain Driver's grave is located in the Old Nashville City Cemetery and is one of three places authorized by the Act of Congress where the flag of the United States may be flown 24 hours a day. Now, another important person within our history was Francis Scott Key. Key was a respected young lawyer living in Georgetown, just west of where the modern-day Key Bridge which crosses the Potomac River. The house was torn down after years of neglect in 1947. He made his home where from 1804 to around 1833 with his wife Mary and their 6 sons and 5 daughters. At the time, Georgetown was a thriving town of 5,000 people just a few miles from the Capitol, the White House, and the federal buildings of Washington. But after war broke out in 1812, over Britain's attempts to regulate America's shipping and their activities while Britain was at war with France, all was not tranquil in Georgetown. The British had entered Chesapeake Bay on August 19, 1814, and by the evening of the 24th of August, the conning stopped, but at about 1 a.m. on the 14th, the British fleet roared alive, lightening the way night sky with Gratis fireworks. Colonel Skinner and Dr. Beams watched the battle with apprehension. They knew that as long as the shelling continued, Fort McHenry had not surrendered. But long before daylight, there had a sudden and mysterious silence. What the three Americans did not know was the British land assault on Baltimore, as well as the naval attack, had been abandoned. Judging Baltimore as being too costly a price, the British officers ordered a retreat. Waiting in the pre-dawn darkness, he waited for the sight that would end his anxiety, the joyous sight of General Olmsted's great flag blowing in the breeze. When at last daylight came, the flag was still there. Being an amateur poet and having been so uniquely inspired, he began to write on the back of a letter he had in his pocket. Sailing back to Baltimore, he composed more lines and his lodgings at the Indian Queen Hotel. He finished the poem. Judge J.H. Nicholas, his brother-in-law, took it to a printer, and copies were circulated around Baltimore under the title Defense of Fort McHenry. Trinity's copy survived. It was printed in a newspaper for the first time in the Baltimore Patriot on September 20, 1814, then in papers as far away as Georgia and New Hampshire. To the verses was added a note, tune, Anchor in Heaven. In October, a Baltimore act sang Keys' new song in public performance and called the Star-Spangled Banner. Immediately popular, it remained just one of several patriotic airs until it was finally adopted as our national anthem on March 3, 1931. But the actual words were not included in the legal documents. Key himself had written several versions with light variations, so discrepancies in the exact wording still occur. The flag, our beloved Star-Spangled Banner, went on view for the first time after flying over Fort McHenry on January 1, 1876, at the Old State House in Philadelphia for the nation's centennial celebration. It now resides in the Smithsonian Institution's Museum of American History. On opaque curtain shields, renew fragile flag from light and dust. The flag is exposed for viewing for a few moments once every hour during museum hours. This information came from the Smithsonian website. Francis Scott Key was a witness to the last enemy fire to fall on Fort McHenry. The fort was designed, a Frenchman named Jean Fonts, and was named for then Secretary of War James McHenry. Fort McHenry holds the unique designation of National Monument and Historical Shrine. Since May 30, 1949, the flag has flown continuously by a joint resolution of Congress over the monument marking the site of Francis Scott Key's birthplace, Cherubra Farm, Carroll County, Keymoor, Maryland. As you can see, there's a lot of history to this. Let's go on into the flag, which the Civil War era citizens felt so passionately about flags that after the surrender of Fort Sumter, the garrison is saying, toured the country for the duration of the war. The poet and hospital attendant Walt Whitman laminated the amount of blood spent to retain the simple four-cornered regimental rag. I have a little flag. It was taken by the secessionist in a cavalry fight and rescued by the man in our bloody little skirmish, Whitman wrote. It cost three men's lives just to keep one little flag, 4x3. The flag was originally designed to unfurl gradually from a ship's mast. Drivers received the homemade flag with 24 stars in 1824, sewn for him by his mother and a group of young sailormen female admirers to celebrate his appointment at the age of his 21st as a master mariner and commander of his own ship, the Charles Doggett. According to legend, when Driver raised the flag up at the main mast, he lifted his hat and declaimed, "My ship, my country, and my flag, oh glory." Salem Herrion Bonnie Heard Smith has found no evidence whatsoever the driver made such a stiffy, courteous pronouncement. He more likely named the flag when he's reflecting of his adventurous 20-year career in an American merchant seaman who called to China, India, Gibraltar, and throughout the South Pacific, at one point ferrying survivors of the HM Battery from Tahiti to Pitcairn Island under the flag. "Has been my staunch companion and protection," he wrote. "Savages and heathens, lowly and oppressed, held and welcomed it at the far end of the wide world. Then why should it not be called, oh glory?" A portrait of the driver as a young captain shows a dashing man with sideburns, a confident smile, and a forthright shirt. He made profits in his tortoise shell trade and could converse a bit of Fahian. Family members tell stories of him seizing the wheel of his ship himself in Galas and facing down a hostile tribal chief in New Zealand with a pistol in hand and a dirk in his mouth. The flag embodied America as he knew it at this point, going across the world, says Inma Curator, Jennifer Locke Jones. He carried it with him, and it was the pride of the independent free spirit. He was taking a bit of America to uncharted territories, and he felt very proud that this was the symbol to flow under. He took a piece of his home, and with whatever he went. these people back then, as you read this story that the Smithsonian has, this is just a little bit that I have read to you, but you can see that they have great pride and love for the flag, and the flag meant a lot to them. It meant there's so many things that show that the flag, you have to take care of Old Glory. Today, do, and they don't understand that the Old Glory is what is our history. That's our heritage. That was left by these men. Whenever we look at the making of the flag itself, we have 50 stars on the flag. Those represent each of our states. Then we look at the colors of our flag, the peace, the magnitude, the blood. It's one of those things that I don't understand why people just want to destroy our flag. It's really hurtful. You know, a lot of people might say, why is the U.S. flag red, white, and blue? Every 4th, we see the flags waving, and we see what everything. Every 4th of July, we flaunt the Uncle Sam's hat. We wave that flag in the parade. There's a lot of people that's going to be doing that. We see the fireworks go off. But yet, so many people don't understand the significance of the red, white, and blue. On June 14th, in 1777, in Philadelphia, the Marine Committee of the Second Continental Congress adopted a resolution that read the following. Resolved that the flag of the United States be 13 stripes, alternate red and white, that the Union be 13 stars in a blue field representing a new constellation. And with these words, the stars and stripes were born. That the resolution never said a word about the significance behind the choice of red, white, and blue, and for good reason. The Korean College did not have any official meeting when the flag was adopted in 1777. The colors and the significance still trace back to the birth of the country and had very specific meanings and the creation of the Great Seal a year earlier. On July 4th, 1776, the Continental Congress passed a resolution authorizing a committee to develop a seal for the country. The committee was instructed to draw up a seal that reflected the founding fathers' beliefs and values, as well as the sovereignty of the new nation. Red, white, and blue were chosen, and the Great Seal was officially adopted on June 20th, 1782. Heretically, devices such as seals have specifically meanings for each element and color. And the U.S. seal was no exception. Charles Thompson, Secretary of the Continental Congress, explained the significance to Congress when he presented the seal. The colors, Thompson said at the time, are those used in the flag of the United States of America. White signifies purity and red, hardness and valor. And blue signifies vigilance, perseverance, and justice. Mike Burgess, a flag expert with the American Legion, says that the most obvious reason for the flag's colors is that they were simply taken from our mother country's flag, the Union Jack of England. Our heritage does come from Great Britain, and that was just a second. Our heritage does come from Great Britain, and that was some of the thought process that went about in coming up with our flag. As we stand at the America's flags, red, white, and blue, they come from the three colors that the founding fathers had served under or had been exposed to. Over the years, people have altered Thompson's original interpretation. Some now say that Rev represents the blood spilled by the Patriots and those who fought to protect our country. President Reagan even put his own spin to the matter when he proclaimed 1986 the year of the flag. The colors of our flag signify the qualities of the human spirit we Americans cherish, Reagan said, red for courage and readiness to sacrifice, white for pure intentions and high ideals, and blue for vigilance and justice. The significance behind the flag's design is more commonly known than that of its colors. The 50 stars stand for America's 50 states, while the 13 red and white stripes represent the 13 colonies. But there's also a lesson note interpretation for the Stars and Stripes. The House of Representatives' 1977 book about the flag states, "The star is a symbol of the heavens and the divine goal to which man has aspired from the immoral. The stripe is symbolic of the rays of light emanating from the sun." Although most Americans today aren't aware of the specific symbolism behind the flags, red, white, and blue, flag expert Buss is not concerned. Instead, he believes the flag's power to evoke patriotism and pride after all these years is most important. Buss veteran flag represents why we serve, Buss said. We were there because the flag represented our freedoms, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of religion. This was in the Time magazine, what I just read to you, by Nicole Greenston on July 4th, 2013. Now, whenever we look at this, we look at everything I just read to you, the Smithsonian, the Time, and then we look at today and we look at how people are challenging people to take the flag and drop it on the ground and destroy it. Why do you want to do that whenever you're so, that this is our heritage? This is the way that we were brought up. It has memories to it. The flag is not just a flag. It is our patriotism. It is the way that we live. It is our country's foundation. Our fathers gave it to us to carry on. And why would you want to destroy it? We need to take great honor in our flag. We need to take great honor and oh glory. We need to remember what they stand for. We need to have more pride where we came from. If you don't know where you came from, you definitely won't know where you're going. A person that has, there's so many different things that says that you've got heritage is very, very important. The culture is very important. And without knowing your culture, you don't really have any other freedoms. Yesterday I talked about free will. Well, you have the free will to do what you want to do. You have the free will to destroy our flag. But with every free will choice is a consequence. If you throw away our flag now, what will be the next thing you're going to throw away? Throw away what's important to us. What's the next thing that you're going to do with the flag? It's very important to remember where we came from. Remembering where we came from is, I can't emphasize enough. There are so many different things that we got to remember about history. Charles Churchill says, "History will be kind for me, for I intend to write it." Alan Bennett from the History Boys, the film, "The best moments in reading are when you come across something, a thought, a feeling, a way of looking at things, which you had thought special and particular to you, and now, here it is, set down for someone else, a person you have never met, someone even who is long dead, and it is as if a hand has come out and taken yours." Another saying is by Herman Dame Bestrachen und Gesundheit. "For me, trees have always been the most penetrating creatures. I revere them when they live in tribes and families, in forests and groves, and even more, I revere them when they stand alone. They're like lonely persons, not like hermits who have stolen away out of some weakness, but like great solitary men, like Beethoven and Nietzsche in their highest bars. The world wrestles, their roots rest in infinity. But they do not lose themselves there. They struggle with all the fears of their lives for one thing only, to fulfill themselves according to their own laws, to build up their own form, to represent themselves. Nothing is holier, nothing is more exemplary than a beautiful, strong tree. When a tree is cut down and reveals its naked death rune to the sun, one can read its whole history in the luminous inscribed disc of its trunk and the rings of its years, its bars. All the struggle, all the suffering, all the sickness, all the happiness, and prosperity stand truly written. The narrow years and the luxurious years, the tax withstood, the storms endured, and every young farm boy knows that the hardest and noblest wood has the nearest rings, that high on the mountains and in continuing danger, the most indescribable, indestructible, the strongest, the ideal trees grow. Trees are sanctuaries. Whoever knows how to speak to them, whoever knows how to listen to them, can learn the truth. They do not preach learning and precepts. They preach, undeterred by particulars, the ancient law of life. A tree says, a kernel is hidden in me, a spark, a thought, I am life from eternal life. The attempt and the risk that eternal mother took with me in unique the form and veins of my skin, unique the smallest play of leaves in my branches, and the smallest thorn on my bark. I was made to form and reveal the internal in my smallest special design. A tree says, my strength is trust. I know nothing about my fathers. I know nothing about the thousand children that every year spring out of me. I live out of the secret of my seed and to the very end, and I care for nothing else. I trust that God is in me. I trust that my labor is holy. Out of this, I trust I live. When we are stricken and cannot bear our lives any longer, then a tree has something to say to us. Be still. Be still. Look at me. Life is not easy. Life is difficult. Those are childish, yet God speaks within you, and your thoughts will grow silent. You are anxious because your path leads away from mother and home, but every step and every day leads you back again to the mother. Home is neither here or there. Home is within you, or home is nowhere at all. A longing to wander tears my heart when I hear trees rustling in the wind at evening. If one listens to them silently for a long time, the longing reveals its kernel, its meaning. It is not so much a matter of escaping from one's suffering, though it may seem to be so. It is longing for home, for memory of the mother, for new metaphors for life. It leads home. Every path leads homeward. Every step is birth. Every step is death. Every grave is mother. So the trees rustle in the evening when we stand uneasy before our own childish thoughts. Trees have long thoughts, long breathing and restful. Just as they have longer lives than ours, they are wiser than we are. As long as we do not listen to them, but when we have learned how to listen to trees, then the brevity and the quickness and the childlike hasteness of our thoughts achieve as incomparable joy. Whoever has learned how to listen to trees no longer wants to be a tree. He wants to be nothing except what he is. That is home. That is happiness. As you can see, full of history, understood that as you looked at things like the tree, the flag, you were actually talking about where you came from. The soul becomes dyed with the color of its thoughts by Marcus Aurelius' meditation. Whenever you look at a flag, there's history in that flag. Whenever you look at the flag, you're looking at what could be with the flag. I don't know how much. Johnny Cash had a song, and with his lyrics, he said, "Rugged old flag, I walked through a country courthouse square. On a park bench, an old man was sitting there. I said, your old courthouse is kind of run down. He said, nah, it'd do for our little town." I said, your old flag pole has leaned a little bit, and there's a rugged old flag. You got to hang it on it. He said, have a seat, and I sat down. Is this the first time you've been to our little town? I said, I think it is. He said, I don't like to brag, but we're kind of proud of that old rugged flag. You see, we got a little hole in that flag there. When Washington took it across the Delaware, and it got powdered burned the night Francis Scott Key sat watching it, writing, say, can you see? I got a rip in New Orleans when Packingham and Jackson tugged at his seams and almost fell at the Alamo beside the Texas flag, but she weighed so through. She got cut with the sword at Chancellorsville, and she got cut again at Silo Hill. There is Robert E. Lee and Burgard and Bragg, and the south wind blew hard on the old rugged flag. On Flanders Field in World War I, she got a big hole from the Bertha gun. She turned blood red in World War II. She hung limp and low a time or two. She was in Korea, Vietnam. She went through. She was sent by her Uncle Sam. She raved from our ships upon the briny foam, and now they've about quit waving back here at home. In her own good land here, she's been abused, she's been burned, dishonored, denied, and refused. By the government for which she stands, has been scandalized throughout our land. And she's getting threadbare, and she's worn thin, but she's in good shape for the shape she's in, because she's been through the fire before, and I believe she can take a whole lot more. So we raise her up every morning, and we bring her down slow every night. We don't let her touch the ground, and we fold her up right. On second thought, I do like to brag, because I'm mighty proud of that ragged old flag. That was from Johnny Cash. So whenever we start thinking about the flag, we need to pay great honor to it. I am very proud to be able to speak to you about the flag. It's like on my sash, I'm going to have many flags because the flag is very important to me. My father fought underneath the flag. I personally remember going to my grandfather's funeral and they handed the flag to my grandmother. I remember many times as a child, I got despaired, and when the ride went out, I saw that flag. It was so honorable and so pleasure to be able to see it. And being able to be today's American woman and know that I'm able to represent the American flag like this, talk to you about the American flag, it's an honor. It's something that I feel like everybody should be able to know and understand. If you want to find more about my pageant, please go to www.todaysamericanwoman.com. www.todaysamericanwoman.com. This is Today's American Woman National Elegant Mistress 2015. And please respect the flag. Thank you.